This is a production of Cornell University.
From Cornell University's world-renowned turfgrass program, I'm Frank Ross.
And I'm Carl Scamenti, and this is episode 23 of Turf Talk, brought to you in partnership with our friends at Winfield United. Turf Talk provides just-in-time, science-based recommendations for professional turfgrass managers in the northeastern U.S. So, Frank, it finally feels like the weather's breaking a little bit, feels a little bit more like fall. What did Professor Art DiGaetano tell us about kind of the shift in weather we're going to expect now?
Yeah, it looks like we had our last week of high heat stress throughout much of the Northeast, Carl. I think now we're we've looked at the growing degree day accumulations. We've stopped talking about the amount of days you're behind. And essentially, we're going to look back at this growing season as being significantly longer and more stressful than we've had for a really long time. So I think there's a little bit of oxygen we can all come up for the next couple of weeks. Soils are starting to cool. Looks like upper 60s to the mid 70s. Last week, temperatures were 10 to 12 degrees above normal in some areas. So that's why some of the soils are still staying cool. But of course, the story was the widespread rainfall. And there was a band that went through south of Syracuse and just north of the city and the extreme coast of New England, dropping 2 to 3 inches of rainfall. ET was really low. So there continues to be a lot of moisture in the system, Carl. And it doesn't look like we're going to get a lot more moving forward. We're going to get a little dry period and the temperatures are going to cool out. But we're going to talk later about maybe you don't want to jump on the soil too quick, but we'll save that for later for the key. So in general, we're looking at a new pattern.
Yep. Yeah. And so with that new pattern, we're starting to notice some insect pests, right? We're starting to notice where white grubs are and the vertebrates are digging them up. We're again noticing a lot of this ABW damage late in the year. Maybe you could touch on that a bit.
Yeah, I have to say we had a lovely conversation on our conference call with Professor Kyle Wickings, our soil insect ecologist here in the turfgrass program at Cornell. And of course, you know how I can be, Carl. I just interrogated him like he had the white light on him and just badgering him because we haven't talked in a while. And you're right. The insect issues are abound, but if you think about biological activity for a second, right, warm and wet is going to help most biological organisms that need and thrive on a little bit of heat during the season. So it's no surprise that insect populations are very interestingly high, active, and spread out this year. So I started interrogating him about annual bluegrass weevil because I think, as we mentioned last week, the second generation of these organisms, the late second generation, early third generation, there's damage showing up on, of all things, bentgrass. So a couple of things were his comments. One was that it looks like it's a very synchronous population, that the second generation is all coming out at the same time. The feeding is very intense. And we're seeing lots of feeding on bentgrass, which, as you said and I said offline, that is not surprising to scientists, but appears to be surprising to the industry itself. There are widespread reports of annual bluegrass weevil feeding on bentgrass in the literature. But if you look closely at that, there is evidence that fecundity or reproduction is reduced. So they don't reproduce as well when they're feeding on bentgrass. But it's alarming that they're feeding on bentgrass so heavily at this time that the damage is noticeable. Now, what does this mean? Kyle's suggestion was you could potentially have a big, healthy population going into the winter. Mm-hmm. And if we have a mild winter, we could expect intense pressure from this pest next year. And that's very much dependent on the overwintering. So a couple of things. First is control. We have good regular control programs for the first and maybe early second generation or that first generation larvae. Mm-hmm. But we don't have good control programs in place or timings in place for the straggling populations. And even Kyle mentioned some of the green cast stuff or the weevil track stuff, mm-hmm. all the people scouting. It's critical to scout and time your management based on the stage that you've got. But there really isn't good research about how to control these later stage populations. So that was one of the big things that he said. Another thing that he said was how we manage our native areas. At if you he finds these native areas on golf courses are excellent overwintering sites for annual bluegrass weevil. He also finds that leaving the material on the native area through the winter enhances overwintering of these organisms. However, removing it doesn't solve the problem completely. They still overwinter. There just isn't as many of them. So you can't say it reduces the problem necessarily. It just doesn't make it worse like it appears leaving the debris does, leading to flare-up. So that was a very interesting aspect of the annual bluegrass weevil control, a widespread discussion about that that led into grubs, Carl. So do you want to ask me any annual bluegrass weevil questions before I move on to yakking about grubs?
Well, it sounds like the ABW population, like Kyle said, is synchronous. With the grubs we were talking about, it's actually the opposite. It's a little bit more diverse in life stage.
That's exactly right. It's asynchronous. So he's got adult Japanese beetles that are causing a lot of the damage right next to first instar grubs that would be susceptible to the entomopathogenic nematodes, right? The parasitic nematodes that can be applied. We don't have a lot of good curative products we like to recommend for grubs at this stage. And that's why much of grub control has moved to be a pre-emergent program. Now, with grubs, it's the same story, Carl. If this wide life stage goes into the winter young, you know, eggs, first instar, larvae, and if the winter is mild, when it opens up in the spring, you could have additional and intense feeding in the spring, which actually might warrant a curative application, something we don't normally recommend because the grubs are usually so big in the springtime that you can't get them with the normal insecticide application. So I would say the message for this week from a pest perspective is really to dig in the soil and look around and see what's happening. If you see what's, if you have history of grub damage, start looking, because with the scrutiny that insecticides are under, the sooner we learn how to use alternative approaches to controlling grubs, the quicker we'll be able to alleviate the public's concern about insecticide use.
Yeah, and so you're talking about digging in the soil, doing that scouting, not just now, but 2 months before this time period to really get your timing right. Now that it's getting into the fall and people are maybe looking at renovations, seeding areas, maybe doing some bunker renovations, getting large pieces of equipment on the soil, what keys do you have for those people to look out for?
Well, of course, as you just said, digging in the soil and monitoring your soil moisture, monitoring your soil for whether it's good to be worked, right? When is it good to work a soil? If you want to do some amendments, if you had a lawn with a tough summer and you want to renovate it and you know it's got soil problems, that if you're going to work that soil, that it's not too wet and not too dry. You want it on the dry side of moist. And if you have a well-drained site, that should be okay to do. But if you have a heavy soil with the rainfall we've been getting, the same rule applies. You're likely to do more harm than good by trying to really cultivate and amend that soil at this time when it's too wet. So again, you know, this is a time when a little bit of patience might do. But of course, if your soil will receive some equipment and you're not really going to amend it, and all you want to do is get some grass started, I can tell you, boy, grass will grow from seed like crazy in this weather. So if you can get seed on the ground and just get that vegetation off the top, you know, get that crabgrass off there before it flowers, scalp it to the ground, and just seed right into that beautiful soil there, you're going to have very high success with the weather that's coming to get that new establishment. So, Carl, I would say, if you're not amending the soil, it's an ideal time to start putting that grass seed on the ground.
And something other people are going to look at also is putting fertilizer out there too. Now, when we talk about the Sage Advice for the week, we're going to talk about fall fertilization, right?
That's right. And again, same rule applies. We're going to be talking about nitrogen fertilization for the next bunch of episodes on the podcast here, because it has really shifted from the old thinking about the way we fertilize. Now is a really ideal time to be giving your plants the nitrogen they need to recover from the summer stress and get start to acclimate for the winter. And typically we wait and we wait and we wait, but now's a good time. And in fact, in the next 4 to 6 weeks, we're going to stop nitrogen. We want to stop nitrogen from basically the middle of October to the end of October. Those are our last applications. We're not applying nitrogen in November and December anymore, Carl, like we used to recommend. So it's a prelude to the discussion we're going to keep having. But right now, if you need recovery and that soil's not saturated and you're going to be able to get that fertilizer on the ground, you're going to see your turf respond really well, which could help with the fall dollar spot if you're on a golf course, that you'll be able to sort of recover and outgrow that devastating pathogen. So lots more to chat about nitrogen going forward, Carl.
Yep, Frank, thanks as always for the sage advice. It's finally good to feel a little bit more like fall here. And thank you all to our listeners for listening to the 2018 Turf Talk podcast series brought to you just in time by Cornell University in partnership with our friends at Winfield United. You can find us online at turf.cals@cornell.edu and on Twitter at @CornellTurf. As always, we'd love your feedback and encourage you to join the conversation by leaving a review or comment. For Turf Talk, I'm Carl Scamenti.
And I'm Frank Rossi. Have a great week.
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.